Welcome back to the Scholten Productions podcast. I'm Frank Scholten, and along with my co-host Nick Badros, we're here to guide you through local hockey and grassroots of the game. Been busy times, but Nick, how are things going up there with you? Up in the trees as always, eh?
Oh, pretty good. You know, the usual. The joys of summer keeps you busy, especially in the part of the world we live in. So it's been nice. It's been sad not hearing your voice for the last 2 weeks, but whatever.
Oh, I'm sure. Tell everybody a bit about what your day-to-day life is up there, because I always say Nick's just up there up north.
Layout for one of the timber companies up here in High Prairie. So my day-to-day is I go, I get emailed a bunch of different types of maps, ones that map wetland areas, one that maps slope, and one that maps tree heights. And my job is to go to various cut blocks that are held by our company in order to go and make sure that every single wetland is taken note of and protected. We can reliably say that we provide an ethical and humane product.
Nice, nice, nice. I know you could talk about that for hours too. Your knowledge of hockey is up there as well, besides just in the timber industry. So always happy to have you along for the ride here. For myself, got to enjoy the rest of the Oilers playoff run. We'll talk about that in a bit here as well. Just touch on, I know a lot of Oilers fans aren't really ready to talk about it. Had the pleasure of heading down to Calgary for the Stampede last week, and got to talk to the man himself, Mr. Paul Bissonnette. Yeah, so it was my buddy had reserved us a table at Greta down there in Calgary because he was having like a meetup party, and it was cool vibes. Like Biz is just like such a nice guy. Like, you know, you see him on the podcast and everything, but it was like a smaller, intimate type gathering. But he like went around to every single table. There was probably 15, 20 tables. And he went around to every single one and just said, "What's up? Thanks for coming, guys." And like, you know, just got to chat. But it was funny when he came to our table. He was like mentioned that he went up to one table outside, and he's like thanking these people, like, "Thanks for coming, guys." And they're like, "Who the F are you?" They had no idea who Biz was, and they had no idea there was a party going on. But
that's awesome.
Yeah, no, super cool guy, real genuine, like didn't rush, took pictures and everything was cool. And when he was sitting at our table too, I was asking him because, I still hear about like this story about Arizona, like Phoenix and all that, them not having a team anymore. So I wanted to ask him about that. And, I think he's mentioned it on the podcast. He's a big fan of hockey in the desert. He thinks it belongs there. And he just kind of said, hockey will be back there. It's a popular sport. It's made for the desert. They have a good entertainment district, and he sees it coming back there. Just not 100% sure what the timeline is for that, but they have room for a hockey team there, and it just needs to be done right, because in his words, they got shafted by the owner a couple too many times. So according to him, it'll be back there, but just a matter of time, I guess. Couple things from the hockey world to catch up. We had the Brick Invitational Tournament going on at West Edmonton Mall here in Edmonton. Detroit Junior Red Wings defeat the Toronto Bulldogs in the final with a score of 4-3. Christian Kolarik gets a hat trick in that game to lead his team to victory, while Wings player Kaysen Puusatari picks up the MVP award with 7 goals and 13 assists in 8 games. I don't know if you saw any videos from that tournament. I saw a couple. But that Puusatari kid, sorry, I'm probably butchering your last name, buddy, but he is just unreal. Like the slick hands he had with the puck there, and I saw it at last year's tournament with Liam Tepp, and these kids coming up are just insane. And you hear it like from everybody else, you can't judge it too much right now, like things even out as they get older, once hitting is introduced. But it's still hard to not watch these videos or go to the games and not be just in complete awe of what some of these kids are able to do at such a young age. Hey,
no, it's insane to watch. Just like you look at the kids that were our age going through and stuff like that, and the innovation we've seen in the game of hockey since even when we were that young, the stuff that these guys are practicing, like half of these kids can do a Michigan nowadays before they're through to their U10 days, right? Like it's just common knowledge of and common skills kind of stuff. Whereas when we were that age, never would have thought of doing stuff like that, right? And it's awesome to see how the evolution of the game has just focused so hardly on the development of those kinds of skills and just the overall control that people have, like kids these days have with the puck, their skating ability and how important it is to develop their skating and stuff. Since guys like Connor McDavid and Nathan MacKinnon and stuff like that have really shown the edge that you get from having such a solid skating foundation and stuff like that. It's insane to see the things that kids nowadays are practicing that you and I never would have thought of practicing growing up, right?
Yeah, 100%. And the Brick has like this whole reputation for being like, an NHL gold mine. Which for sure a lot of kids like that play in this tournament. I think it's, five players that play in this tournament end up in the NHL for sure. And they have a whole wall of like the names and stuff of kids that move on to the NHL. But it's this whole thing, right? Like a lot of youth tournaments that are this big held in other places. Like from my experience, they're held at facilities with four rinks and they're held over, I don't know, two, 3 days, not 2 weeks. So it's this whole party. It's in the middle of the West Edmonton Mall, which, Edmontonians know, like it's crazy in there, right? And having a hockey rink in there, it's a big thing for these players to come and play in that atmosphere. So it's a huge thing. Just from like talking to people around youth hockey as well, like when I was at that CCM invite in Chicago last year as well, that guy, some of the organizers there are saying, yeah, the Brick gets a good reputation, but there's a lot of, players that play in our tournament that go on to make it to the NHL. We just don't have a good way to track how many are making it to the next level because there's so many different events and there's so many players. So it's harder for them. And that's why, the Brick, it's you have your set amount of teams and every game going on at once, and they can keep these perfect records of who goes on to the higher level. So that, that's why it's this glorious youth tournament, which is gets such a good reputation for sure. But it's thousands of dollars for parents as well. So not, I've talked to people too, like in that Chicago tournament, like some parents just decided to spend their money elsewhere. So yeah, of course, it's a
No,
great event to
definitely.
be, yeah, a great event to be at, but
I got to play a game in West Edmonton Mall there just before I left the city there. And you go down to where the dressing rooms are, and they have every year that the tournament's been on, they have a wall with every name of every kid that's played there. And then they'll have people who made the NHL. I think that's like a 3-5 game minimum, somewhere in there. They have their names highlighted, and so you can go through and pick out who made it to the NHL and from what year. It was cool seeing some of the names you recognize and like, oh wow, if they were here, that's super cool, right?
Just going on to, I saw an article a while ago. It was on June, and it's saying that enrollment in hockey is down, which I don't doubt it is. But you always hear people saying, yeah, hockey's getting so much more popular, the enrollment's going up. But then you have these stats that are saying the enrollment's going down. Obviously, not able to track everything. Some of it's Hockey Canada related, some of it's non-sanction related. You can't track everything perfectly. But what do you think is the reality here when you have people like Hockey Canada and local organizations saying that they're not able to field as many teams or put as many teams on the ice this year because kids are going elsewhere or just the enrollment's down in general?
Well, I think we have to face the fact that hockey at the lower levels, hockey is a dying sport. At the pro levels and stuff like that, it's growing, it's booming, right? Like you saw the viewership numbers from the Stanley Cup final this year. Like hockey is a hot ticket item that they can seize on and continue to grow the game if they play their cards right going into the future. But at the everyday minor hockey level, it's hard to keep going with it, right? Like things are so expensive now, not even including sports, that when you look at the fees for registration, the amount of traveling you're going to have to do, not to even mention the equipment costs and stuff like that, right? Like it's hard to find people who can afford life and then that on top of it, right? It's harder now than it has been when we were growing up, when our parents were growing up. And so to see the kind of numbers going down over the past couple of years, it makes sense, right? Because it's hard to play a sport when you can't afford to do so, right?
100%. Yeah, it's the article mentioned families are choosing soccer and basketball over hockey, rising cost of equipment and ice. Soccer is the top choice for Canadian youth at 16%, followed by swimming, then hockey, then basketball. And as everybody knows, hockey in the US is growing as well. So in 2021, they surpassed Canada in registered players with 400,000, and that number's only higher at this point. I mean, larger population, obviously, but it just, the sport's still growing. I like your point, or I find it interesting that point you said about the how hockey's dying at the younger levels. Kind of repeating the same thing a lot of the time when we're talking about how expensive hockey is, but like non-sanctioned leagues are so expensive. And if you have a if you have a double A team in a smaller town outside of a major city, half that double A team goes to play in an non-sanctioned league. That leaves a lot of people that don't have a team to play on, a smaller team that folds, kids that don't play hockey. There's different situations for every town, every organization. But yeah, I think with these higher level leagues that aren't always sanctioned by Hockey Canada, like it takes up ice, you take up resources, the leagues have more money, they can pay the refs better. There's already a ref shortage, as you know. I mean, you're ref yourself, right? So it's you don't want to be the guy to point fingers at anybody, and there's a lot of problems that lead to what's going on. But yeah, I think it's interesting the way things are going now. And we're going to see in the next 5 to 10 years here, like, is hockey just going to be abolished in small towns at the youth level? But yeah, I guess only time will tell.
No, and a good point you brought up is ice. Ice is very seldomly thought about when you think about the cost of hockey, but between those leagues coming in and taking up demand for ice, or like even with coaching and playing in Edmonton, dealing with the headache that is trying to get ice in the city. Like when I first got there, a sheet of ice cost you $200 an hour. Now it's getting close to $300, $400 an hour for a sheet of ice. Even though you look at when we were growing up in Barrhead, going rate for ice was like $150 an hour when we were junior high-ish age, and now it's almost the same. It's about the same price as it is in Edmonton, right? It's insane the amount of cost. And you think about a minor hockey program that has two teams at every level from initiation to U18. And each one of those, there's two teams at each level. Each of those teams need two practices a week and probably about what at least one home game a week. So that's three ice slots times however many teams that is. That's a lot of money a year just in ice fees, right? And so then that trickles down into raising the cost of your registration fees and stuff like that, is because like ice gets silly expensive, right?
Yeah, and I mean the population in Canada is like doubled. It's gone up so much in the past few years as well, and that's a whole nother thing. But you get more people, but then you're still not, we don't necessarily have all the facilities we need to get more
Oh,
players
and that's
in.
a big thing.
Yeah, and then you're looking at it like, well, there's so many more people, but the registrations are going down, there's less enrollment, so you're just kind of, everybody at the top's chasing their tails wondering where the issue is. And yeah, us as former players too look at it like, what's the solution here? And the biggest barrier is cost, of course, right? So
Yeah,
no,
it
we got
definitely
we
is.
yeah we got to find a way to, make this a more affordable sport. And I wish I could supply a solution for that. But the more we have these big new leagues, expensive leagues coming in, the more smaller town hockey gets abolished, I think that's just going to be less of an option. I mean, like many families in this country, my family are immigrants as well. They moved here in 2000 and to a small town. Like, my sisters were in dance and I was in hockey. Like, there's not much else to do in town, right? Like, no, you have a couple school sports, but, you know, hockey is the main thing to do. And if that's not an option, if minor hockey in small towns isn't an option anymore at somewhat of an affordable price, like, could there be a day where these small towns don't have hockey anymore? Who knows? But
no, exactly. And that would be a sad day indeed, because, like, you look at all the buddies we had growing up that not only did we play hockey, but a bunch of us played a bunch of the old other different school sports. But, like, there's a big part of the community that had, that were either playing it or had siblings playing hockey, right? Like, hockey was interwoven in that community, like, you wouldn't believe. And to see it slowly dwindling, and, like, even going back and reffing hockey in Barrhead this year, I noticed a decline in the amount of kids that were on a team, right? There were a couple levels where there was only one team per level, and there were a couple teams where if they did split up the teams, the numbers were so low that you only had two lines, forwards, two lines of defensemen and a goalie, right? Like, it's tough to play hockey that way. You get in insane shape, but it's tough to play hockey that way, right? Like,
and make a competitive team that's going to go on to win a championship or do well.
No, yeah. Exactly, right? Yeah. Like, it's sad to see, because, like, that was one of the things I noticed with coming back and reffing, was in the 5 years that I had been gone, the number of players they had, at, especially the younger levels, was way, way down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I remember that, like, you know, in Barrhead, we always had two midget teams, right? And then a couple of years after I was done, like, you know, you hear that there's only one midget team. Oh, they're down to one peewee team. And, yeah, you just, you know, you worry for the enrollment, and, you know, it flip flops. And you mean, you have individual kids that don't play hockey for, you know, personal reasons. They want to focus on school sports, and some families, yeah, it gets too expensive. So there's all these different reasons, but yeah, it's something to think about at the end of the day, for sure. Just where we're going with the game itself. So
exactly.
So we're going to throw it over to Colton Pham. He's going to jump on and chat a bit about his time playing in junior hockey. He played two seasons with the Vegreville Vipers in the Canadian American Junior Hockey League, captaining them to a championship in his second year as captain. Going to talk a little bit about the Oilers, their playoff run, how that finished up, and then just some other stuff in the junior hockey news. So we're going to throw it over to Colton right about now.
Hometown, and I wasn't really looking to play, right? Like, I was just stumbled in there and tried it out, and oh man, that first practice was brutal. Like, the first skate I had with them was god awful, and then after that I kind of figured my stuff out and got back into it. But I wasn't really looking on playing too much, and then this opportunity came, and I'm like, well, I mean, it is in my hometown. I get to hang out with my family and my friends, be closer to home. And so I just went forward, and it ended up being a very good decision I made in my life moving forward with everything.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, I think there's nothing that beats, like, playing hockey in your hometown, right? What would you say, like, was the community support pretty well? Like, I see you guys on Facebook all the time, and, like, you know, it seems like you guys get a decent crowd at some of these games. Is that the case?
Yeah, we got a pretty decent fan base. I think everybody likes to watch us play because we bring a lot of good things to the town and just try our best to help out. And in return, we get the attendance and the support.
Volunteering is huge from all, like, that's a league standard, right? Even for any, you know, top level league, right?
Yeah, in the, like, fall time, we go out and rake the leaves for anybody. We go around, we get messages on Instagram, Facebook, and everything, and word of mouth too. We get all that, so we go out and do that, the shoveling, the reading to the kids at the school. One of the schools hosts a winter carnival, so we go there, we put on an event ourselves, and then everyone comes, hangs out. That's it. We do a lot.
Do you feel like sometimes if you bring this new team to town that's, like, unproven, you know, the locals that have been there forever in minor hockey, do they see it as like a threat to the local minor hockey, or is it just a kind of how you approach it?
I wouldn't say it's a threat to the local minor hockey, because we did a lot of great things for them and they helped us out. We helped them out.
Which I don't think is the case with every organization either. You guys did a good job out there.
Yeah, for sure. A new team, new town, some things some people have never heard of. Yeah, you can be a little skeptical about it, but I feel like over the last 2 years, we've grown and showed the community that we're not here to in the business to just play hockey and do everything. Well, we're here to not only play hockey, but we're also here to serve our community in every way and aspect we can.
100%. And that's Nick and I were talking about that earlier. I think that's the biggest thing with any new team, you know, because the AJ has a new team as well now, the Devon Extreme, and then a bunch of these teams moving over to the BCHL. Like, you need to send that message to the community that you care what they think and you're there, you know, you want them to be there to support you, because at the end of the day, you know, if you don't have fans, you don't have a team. So you need to really approach it, especially with a new league and new teams, right? Like, I think you guys did a great job, and, you know, it's only up from here, especially with like winning a championship last year and everything. That's big. I mean, it shows the people that you're there to belong, right? So,
yeah.
No, it'll be exciting. We talk a lot about, you know, the differences between like unsanctioned leagues, sanctioned leagues, and where they're going. And, yeah, it's interesting to kind of get opinions from everybody about, what's happening there. Speaking earlier about the Oilers too, did you kind of get to experience, I know a lot of Oilers fans aren't ready to talk about it, but you're an Oilers fan too, aren't you?
Yeah, I am here.
Yeah, did you get a chance to go out in downtown or anything during the watch parties? Yeah. Game 7 or
well,
anything?
I was lucky enough to be able to attend some of the actual games inside of Rogers, and oh man, I don't think anybody else will experience anything like it. It's crazy in there. It's awesome.
It's insane, eh? Like,
yeah.
I was thinking about this like kind of the day after they got eliminated. Like, you know, I'm not an Oilers fan or anything, but like I still live in Edmonton. It's, you know, a big part of how I grew up, and I can't remember a time where like the city felt so connected, and people were just together and everybody cheering for this one thing, you know, to happen. And it was such a cool experience. And Nick, I know like you weren't around either, but you saw all the stuff on social media too, right?
Oh, absolutely. It was an environment that I wish I could have been a part of. I picked a shitty time to move away from the city, just as the Oilers went on a run like that. But like, even just living through the posts on social media, and my sister, she was in and around the city, and she got to go to a bunch of the watch parties and stuff like that, and hearing her tell stories, and she's not a big hockey fan whatsoever. She honestly hated the fact getting dragged from rink to rink growing up. And for her to have had as much fun at these watch parties and stuff like that as she did, and just how excited she was for the Oilers to be on a run, just shows you that it wasn't just hockey fans that were having fun and excited about what was going on. It was just everybody in that city was just walking around with joy, right? It was just happiness and excitement and the best kind of anxiety of not knowing what's going to happen in tomorrow's game and stuff like that. And just that the everyday ordinary people who aren't even that big of hockey fans were showing that kind of joy and enthusiasm too. It was just awesome to see, and I wish I could have experienced that.
Yeah, you see now with like, I'm not sure how much you guys follow soccer too, but like the Euros and the Copa America, like how crazy it looks like those atmospheres.
Well, look at the Colombia Argentina game on Sunday there. People are sneaking into the arena through air ducts and stuff like that. It was just insane to watch. And to watch England get all so excited about the final just for the best outcome in the world to happen.
Yeah. And that, I like I mentioned to like my family, we're immigrants, they came here, and like, so I grew up in a soccer family too. So to see like something close to that, being the Oilers make it to game 7 of the Stanley Cup finals, like I, you know, it's incredible for the city. I'm sure they made a lot of money, all the local businesses that were struggling after the pandemic, I'm sure it was great for them. so many memories that will live in the live with people for a long time. Like, I mean, I'm not sure like how you got tickets, whether you purchased them, Colin, or whether you got them from work or whatever, but like, you know, a lot of people spend a ton of money on it, 'cause it's, you know, it could be a once in a lifetime thing. Right. I'm assuming that was the same thing for you, right?
Yeah. I got fortunate enough that I got, I think it was the Dallas series. I got gifted tickets to go to that, and then ended up buying some on my own because it was worth it.
Got addicted. And
yeah, it was awesome. I'll definitely do it again.
What were the biggest differences between like a regular season game versus a playoff game? Just the noise?
Yeah, the noise, everybody joining in, random chants, random like bursts of energy. And when a big play happened, in the regular season, it's pretty good. It's pretty cool to watch and witness. But during the playoffs, when something like that happens, it's the place erupts, even if it's a good pass or if it's a close shot off the post and everything, the place erupts.
Yeah, totally. And like, I'm sure you guys saw too, like a lot of people were like anti Edmonton bring Canada together. Like not everybody, some people were like, oh, I'd rather like see Florida win. I don't want to see the Oilers be the team to bring Canada the cup or whatever. But, you know, when they were down 3-0 there and they came back to tie it up, like, you know, it felt like it was too good to be true. And like, they just, you know, I mean, I kind of wish at that point they would have just won it, because just for the storyline, like it would have been incredible, unreal.
Hasn't been done for so many years.
No, exactly, right?
Honestly, I think it would have been like, and this is me trying not to be a biased Oilers fan, if that would have happened, it probably would have been the greatest Stanley Cup win of all time. Yeah, the Maple Leafs did it in 1942, but that was 1942 in the heart of the war, where most of the good hockey players were fighting in the war.
Well, I mean, they were saying it would have been one of the greatest comebacks in all of sports too, right? Like, I mean, that again, as a biased hockey fan, but you know, I don't think 3-0 deficit has ever been overcome.
And right? Even well, where they came from.
Yeah.
Like with being the last place team in the league to going on, what was it? How many game heater was it again?
16.
Yes. 16 or something. And then, oh, you guys are going to lose to this team, that team, that team, and going up to the Stanley Cup final and playing one of the best teams in the league and almost taking it.
Yeah.
Well, you kind of got to have a little bit of common sense in that area to be like, okay, maybe these guys kind of got something going.
Oh, exactly. And then you look at it like, I don't know if you guys remember much about the 2016 when the Cavaliers came back from 3-1 and how hype that is and how that's still talked about today, and that this is 8 years later. Like, could you imagine a team coming back from 3-0 to win it? Like,
it would have been something century. Special. And just like the heartbreak, I feel like I watched game 7 from my buddy's place, and he has like a place right above the moss pit. So I was looking down, and once they lost that game, man, it was like people were like, oh, they're gonna riot. I was like, I don't think they're gonna riot. Like, everybody's like, what more could they have done? Like, everybody's just so heartbroken. The city came together, the country came together to like, you know, cheer for this one thing, cheer for this one outcome, and it didn't happen. People are just devastated. Like, it was incredible just watching people file out of the moss pit, and you know, just life back, time life back to reality, right? Like, it just didn't happen. And you know, you just hope that they can maybe do it and go on another run next year.
No, exactly. And like, my sister was at the watch party for game 7, and we phoned her right after the game because I was watching it at my parents' place there. We phoned my sister and we're like, oh, are they going to riot? Are we going to pull a Vancouver and riot? They're like, and my sister's like, no, everybody's here is just too sad. Everybody is just sad and heartbroken. Nothing crazy is going to happen because it was just, like you said, just deflating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was something incredible. And you know, for like, you see interviews on the news, like once in a lifetime thing, right? Like, who knows if they make it next year? Who knows if they make it again in the next 10 years, right? It's just, you know, wait and see game. And there's so many other good teams that are going to be shooting for that. So, but you know, you have those memories, and like, it was, you know, t- 2 months of just like every other day, every couple days, it was, you know, head downtown, get some buddies together, watch it on TV or do whatever. It was so good for the city. And I don't think that's to be underestimated. Doing a pivot to some stuff that kind of applies to junior hockey as well. Nick and I were chatting a bit about this, and I know, Colton, you'll be able to have some input on this as well. A lot kind of about the visors as well. That's a big, big reason why some guys might choose which league they want to play in, why the leagues choose if they want to be sanctioned or unsanctioned. So, this is still a bit new news. So Hockey Canada has announced that its board of directors has approved a Western Canadian development model pilot project for the 2024-25 season. So what does that mean? Basically, in terms of game change, that means all five junior A leagues. So you have the SJHL, MJHL, AJHL, KIJHL, and PIJHL. They're going to adopt almost all of the WHL rules. There's going to be a few outliers, so leagues won't follow the WHL's rules on video review. Probably takes way too many cameras, way too much manpower. They don't have the facilities for that. They also won't follow major penalties, television broadcasts, or some playing equipment area rules. So this is some quotes from Eric Westhaver from The Reminder. So SJHL Commissioner Kyle McIntyre says, in the Western League, you have to have 5 or 6 camera system for video review and video replays. We're not going to implement that. They also have special glass and special boards in the Western League. We're not going to implement that either. And it's just, there's also a rule about like fighting. You can't, in the like the junior A leagues, you won't be able to fight. If you do, you know, get automatic suspension. I think in the WHL, it's like a 2-fight rule. Then you start getting more penalties and that thing, things like that. But yeah, kind of the biggest thing that comes from that whole rule change that a lot of people will be interested in. The leagues will use IIHF rules for visors and cages, not Hockey Canada ones. So as long as you're 18 years or older by December 31st, you can go back to wearing a visor. Players age 17 and younger will still have to wear full face protection. So this whole thing is kind of something that we've talked about a lot, even the past two episodes, Nick, like the visor versus non-visor. So they did a survey 2 years ago with players in the SJHL. Out of the group of players surveyed, 90% of players were willing to have their family sign a waiver and pay extra insurance if they were allowed to wear a half visor. So 90% of players, you know, they'll pay extra insurance, they'll sign a waiver, they'll go at risk to wear a visor. Does that stat surprise you, Colton?
No, not at all. No, I know there was a few kids that were just itching to wear visors because I don't know why, but I think it's just, I think some people just liked it a little better and it looked a little better too.
It feels a little more professional too, right?
Yeah, true. 100%. It does. It's not like you're restricted and it's like back to minor hockey. It's like you're older now. Obviously you're playing in a different league from what you were last year or 2 years ago. It's something a little bigger than that.
Yeah, like when we were younger, the step up was like moving into the custom dressing room with all the couches and the nice stuff, even in our local team. And I know, Nick, you've talked about too, like having a visor is a step up, right? You kind of earn that. You kind of wait to achieve that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yo, absolutely, right? Like it's kind of like it's like a rite of passage, right? It's you made it through your minor hockey days. You're now an adult. You're able to make decisions. And one of the decisions you make is, I am willing to risk my lower face to wear that half visor. I like it better. I can see better. I can breathe better. It's all those little things that I like better. Plus, I just, the look of it, it's that, holy shit, I've made it to the age where I can wear this now. This is awesome. I've wanted to wear a half shield all my life growing up. I've wanted to wear that half shield. I've made it. It's time to wear my half shield, right? Like you kind of, at least for me, like you kind of hype yourself up to that point where it's like, I'm so excited for this. This is like a sign of growing up and maturing. And you're at that age where it's like, I can do this now. And then like, I know when I came back for junior, when I was playing B, I was able to wear the half shield, and then having to go back to the full shield back when they changed the rules, it was just brutal.
You have like all these five junior A leagues, right? And then you have them kind of you know, they're all still part of Hockey Canada, but they've kind of come together now to be like closer to the WHL, right? Like, so essentially what it is, like, they're just following the WHL's rules with their own little stipulations, right? I guess maybe I could ask you, Colton, too. Would you say it's kind of more of a thing, like, or do you think some of these leagues are worried about losing losing their players to the BCHL? I'm not sure how much you follow that stuff, but like, the BCHL is often described as a superior league, right? Do you think some of these junior A leagues are worried that they're going to be losing players to that league, and they need to kind of become more professional before they lose any more?
Yeah, I think everybody kind of needs to step up their game a little bit and be more better, almost, is just a way to put it. I don't know a whole lot. I kind of just hear the gyps from one of my buddy that likes to blab about it all the time. So I kind of hear it from him. And I do agree with you, too, that, yeah, BCHL is a more superior league. And we've obviously seen it from the jump from, let's say, the AJ teams dropping out and hopping over to the BCHL. I think that just goes to show.
Yeah, exactly, right. And with the BCHL too, a lot of it was like money, a lot of it was like recruiting things. They couldn't bring in certain players because of roster restrictions. So you know, I think the leagues are finally kind of starting to take notice, like, if we don't do anything, if we don't start changing, like, if they don't listen to the players, like, that stat's crazy. Like, 90% of these guys would sign a waiver and pay extra money to be able to wear a visor. Well, 90% of your players want this and you're not giving it to them. You know, if that's a big deal for them, they're going to try and find another option. So, you know, I think it's an interesting approach. And obviously, you know, it's headline news for these new teams and all the AJHL, SJHL teams to work a little closer with the WHL, become more like that. But no, I think it's we'll kind of see in the next little bit here what if that helps to keep more talent in the league. But do you want to talk a little bit about that the game you guys are planning on hosting with the Seltzers?
Well, last year, we hosted a charity hockey game for the Ben Seltzer Foundation. And man, it was awesome. We had custom jerseys with different sponsorships from town, like our town. My work sponsored the jerseys as well. My uncle's company down in Vegreville sponsored the jerseys. And we had so many people come out for the game, support, donate, and we ended up raising over $5,000 for their foundation to give to them in a short period of time of planning, figuring out dates with unforeseen circumstances going on with Mike. Happy he's okay now, but he wasn't able to attend. And yeah, it was just Leah, Dylan, Emmy, and my grandfather that came out. Played a good game, played against Cold Lake, and we didn't win, but it was still amazing. The two teams came together at center ice, took a photo with everyone. Everybody was buddy-buddy, and then everyone went back to playing the game.
Do the Seltzer family do more like charity games with other leagues and teams? Because when you told me about it, that's the first I'd heard of it.
I personally don't know. I think we might have, besides the world's longest hockey game and all, I think we were the, correct me if I'm wrong later on, but I feel like we were the first ones to do so.
Okay. That's awesome for the league and the team as well, especially, I mean, you guys that kind of organized it with them. And, you know, I think it's awesome. Hopefully you guys get a good turnout at the next one too. I mean, if the first one went that well, I can't imagine why the second one wouldn't. So,
yeah, it's already in the planning stages. It's been planning. We've been planning and planning ever since the first one, and I feel like the next one that we do is going to be a very good outcome and bigger and better, hopefully.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah, it's sweet. I've heard so much about it, and yeah, I'm sure you guys will do great things in the next one as well. Yeah, just kind of wrap things up too. What would you say to somebody that's considering playing hockey after minor, whether that's junior A, AJHL, whether that's CAJHL, GMHL, or whether they're going to go to decide to play junior B instead?
Go for it. Live it up. You're only going to be so young for a short period of time, and it's okay. After you finish your minor hockey and you don't know exactly what you want to do right after high school and everything, and you play hockey and everything, take that time, take that year or two break and really work on yourself and focus and everything. Dedicate yourself to something that requires a lot of commitment. And then from there, you can decide what you want. And you've already built a strong foundation of commitment, skills, let's say leadership, communication, all that. And then you could apply them to the work field and strive at your job.
100%, man. Hey, Colton, thanks for doing this, bro. I appreciate it. And yeah, hopefully we're still going in 100 episodes. That's the goal for us in the next, next little bit here. But appreciate you jumping on. And
No problem, man. I appreciate having me.
Huge thank you to Colton Pham for joining us on the Sholden Productions podcast. Great chatting with him about his time in the CAJHL, and just getting his opinion on some stuff. We spent a bit of time talking to him after we stopped recording, and just I've known him for a bit. Just a great guy, familiar with the hockey community, knows what's going on in the CAJ as well as some junior stuff, and it was great chatting with him after as well, right, Nick?
Oh, absolutely. Like some of the stuff we didn't record, like he had some really good stories that he told us. A lot of his plans that he has for his future, I really hope come to fruition, because it'll bring a lot of good into this world. And I really hope him all the best in those endeavors.
Yeah. One thing we talked about too was, we asked him, like, a league like the CAJHL, it's an unsanctioned league. Like, it does often get a lot of questions asked. It does often get some hate, but there are people that come in and out of these leagues that do go on to, they have scholarship offers. Like Colton himself had an offer to go play in the ACHA in Ann Arbor, and, other guys in the league, they got offers for different leagues around North America. So there are good things that come out of these leagues, and, even Colton himself said he was skeptical of the team in the league at first, but he spent some time in it, and he's happy with what he got out of the league, and he's doing some great stuff now, and he still has a close relationship with everybody on the team. So it's cool to see that come out of that. So, and yeah, just going back to the story with the WHL, Nick, I know you crashed out there for a sec, but you have you have these junior A leagues, the junior A teams, and they're kind of picking up the rule book of the WHL. Would you say, is that kind of a case that, like, hey, we need to work together, otherwise we're going to keep losing guys to these leagues that aren't, sanctioned by Hockey Canada, and people are starting to rate as better?
No, that's an excellent point you just brought up there. Like, I had mentioned in episodes previous that, like, these leagues need to start working together, right? You need to start building your junior A to feed your CHL, your junior B to feed your junior A, and your junior C to feed your junior B. And I feel like this is an excellent step towards that, right? You're getting everybody playing by the same rule book. You're listening to your players, which you mentioned earlier in this episode. Like, listening to your players is such a huge deal. Because you saw in that statistic, in that article there, it's like 90% of your players want the half shield, right? The fact that they're listening to their players, that's an awesome sign. The fact that they're absorbing and using the WHL's rules is a great step in the right direction.
Because a lot of guys, if they have the ambitions of playing junior and they're good enough, they often choosing between leagues like the AJHL, SJHL, and the WHL, and now this whole nother metric in the BCHL. So to have some consistency there, and you don't have to give up everything if you're playing in this league to play in this league that might have something else that you want. Like, I think, yeah, like you said, it's a step in the right direction. I'd still like to see, obviously I don't know if it's possible, I'd still like to see somewhere, if you want to go play in the WHL, there's that rule where you can't go play college after, you can't go to the States or do whatever. I'm not sure the ins and outs of that, but I would like to see a situation where that's gets amended and you give players more options.
To my knowledge, that is being rectified right now. Okay. I had heard somewhere that then this is a while back, and I can't completely recall details, but like I had heard that they're working on something that will allow WHL players, CHL players to go down and play down in the States. But like the biggest problem that they run into is the fact that the NCAA doesn't allow professional athletes, or like I think with the way it worked was with the rules where players can now brand themselves and make money off their likeness. That whole thing kind of dissolved, or like the first brick of that kind of started falling, because a big issue with it was the CHL players are deemed professionals, because you'll have guys who are on NHL contracts coming down and playing in the WHL, the OHL, and the QMJHL, right? And so they're getting a professional salary while they're playing down in there, and so the whole league gets deemed a professional league, right? That was the big issue, and a lot of the league kind of benefits are subsidized by kind of that kind of stuff, right? Because they have a deal with the NHL that, hey, we can send your players down here, we give you some money, and that kind of, that's like a deal, right? You kind of have a deal, we can use your players, you can use our players to make money, kind of thing, right? Because it all comes down to who gets to make money off the likeness of players and this and that, right? The merchandising rights. And so I think with that likeness rule being taken out of the NCAA, WHL and CHL players will be able to kind of start making their way down there after they're done playing their junior years, or the first couple steps are being made. I'm not 100% sure on which one it is.
Yeah, yeah, that's good to know. Have you seen the Johnny Manziel documentary? It's
not really, no.
Well, you know who he is, though, right? Like, he's was this guy. He was this really big college guy. Like, he was great in college, great in high school, and they had big ambitions for him. But, you know, I think he just got lost in the fame of it all a little bit. But one thing he was upset in was, like, when he was in Texas at Texas A&M, like, he's hearing about all the money that's being made and all the money he's not getting. So, like, he was trying to make some money on the side by doing, like, autograph deals and, like, photo appearances. And, like, that almost got him into some hot water. And, yeah, then you have that whole debate of, like, should college players be paid? And, I mean, I'm sure many of them are.
and that's where that can't remember if it was last year or the year before, but the NCAA introduced that rule that players can profit off their likeness. So you can host autograph events and make money off that. You get a percentage of your jersey sales. You can sell your own photos. You can sign endorsement deals with like brands and sponsorships and this and that. You can say yes to. That's why like every bit of sponsorship deal that Caitlin Clark got this year, she got all that money, right? She was able to, because she was able to use her likeness to make money, whereas 2-3 years ago that wasn't the case in the NCAA. And that's exactly where Joey, what's his last name,
the basketball player,
no, the football player you're talking about,
Johnny Manziel,
thank you. Yeah. Did that. That's exactly where Johnny Manziel ran into his issue, is that was before that rule. And so players weren't technically allowed to profit off their likeness, because then they were getting paid to play sports, which makes them a professional, which then makes them ineligible to play college sports.
Right. It's a whole whirlwind of stuff.
And so, well, if the NCAA is losing money, you are getting losing money on you. You're a expired asset, and you need to be dealt with.
Yeah, college sports is. I'd love to like learn more and dive in and understand like the college sports, like the ins and outs of it, especially like at the football and hockey level. Like some of the stuff that goes on there, it's crazy. Like I've been to a college football game, like out in Baton Rouge, oh, yeah, like LSU, and just the atmosphere there is crazy. But learning the ins and outs of goes on for a college team would be nuts.
NCAA, it's the only nonprofit that makes billions of dollars every year. I really want to get into the Frozen Four and like that whole like ice hockey stuff, because I know being an avid Spit and Chicklets listener, they sure love that Frozen Four and the whole like hockey NCAA tournament. I really need to find a way to start watching that.
Oh, they need, well, I think, I wish they would promote it more in Canada, but I think they're afraid to.
They are, because they know that it would kill the CHL, man.
Yeah. And like you see the videos on social media and like the highlights, and it's insane. Like the level of hockey and the finishes in some of these games. Like so many Canadians like pile on college hockey, but like, oh man, I
Oh
wish
no, college hockey is, I wish, dude, could you, I we should do a trip one day to go down and watch some college hockey.
Yeah, heck yeah. Like,
Absolutely. Go watch like North Dakota, the Fighting Sioux in their rink,
oh.
Boston College, Boston University, Michigan.
One guy, and like, we had some dialogue on Instagram too. I follow him and stuff. His name's Bernie, but yeah, he was kind of always the videographer. I think it was Boston College. Yeah, he was Boston College, and that's where Celebrini was at too, right? So he got to like
Yeah.
film him sometimes, and he's actually just gone a role with the Sabres too, so I don't think he'll be doing that
Oh, hell
anymore.
yeah.
So big congrats to him. But
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
yeah, no, I think college hockey is something that's like gets guarded so much in Canada, and for good reason, because yeah, like you said, they're just
Yeah.
gonna put the other leagues to
Well,
sleep. So
you look at the Frozen Four this year, and it was all tight games. And then you watch the Memorial Cup this year, and oh, what was the team that ran away with it there? They just blew everybody up.
was Saginaw, I think, right?
I think
Yeah.
Saginaw,
Yeah,
yeah. And
Sag.
they just blew everybody out of the water. And like, yeah, you're a fucking wagon. Like, good for you. But like, where's the competitiveness in that, right? Like, these are the best teams from all three of your leagues, and they're still getting blown out of the water up by one team. Then you go and you hear about college hockey, and it's so hard to watch it. I don't know why it's still so hard to watch these kinds of things in this day and age.
I think
Man.
with colleges too, right? Like, 'cause it's all built on like football, right? Everything's built on football, and you throw these other sports
Yeah.
around it and just give students something else to rally around to support
Wow.
team spirit. Like, when we went to McEwen here in the city, and like, I don't think I ever went to a McEwen hockey game, and like, that's partly on me, but that's also partly on
But
the
like,
rink is on the other side of Rogers Place, so you got to make it a thing to go to. And on another token, like, you never, you don't, like, we didn't really hear about it that much. Like, there was never.
there's no advertising. There's no incentive to be a fan of your own school's team, right?
And if nobody else is going, I'm not going, right?
Oh, exactly. And like,
Yeah.
I'd never really, aside from the odd like kick up stand sign of like, there's a game today, and you see it 2 days after it happened. It's like, what the heck? Like, I would have gone if I would have known that. I wasn't really doing anything on Friday night anyway. Like, I could have got drunk at a hockey game and then gone to the bars, you know?
Yeah, and I think the U of A does pretty good with their hockey team. I they do good. Golden Bears.
Oh, if you ever get the chance to go and watch a Golden Bears game,
I
man.
think I'm going to. I was messaging the guy. I think I'm gonna try and go out and film a couple games this year because I think it'd be fun. But yeah.
Dude, one of my favorite hockey going experiences is my dad and I went to a U of A UFC game, and we sat in the student section. Holy hell. That was probably to this day one of my favorite hockey experiences, playing, watching, coaching, reving, all of it. Going to that game, it is amazing atmosphere, and the rink they play in, the Claire Drake. It's over 100 years old. It's got square boards. Benches are on opposite sides from each other. Like, you face your opponent. Oh, it is ancient. And oh, just if you get a chance to go to a Golden Bears game, I cannot recommend it enough.
Yeah, they do good. And like, that's not me dumping on McEwen or anything, or any of the smaller school teams. Like, you can only work with what you got. But like, it's a smaller student body for sure. And I've known some of the guys that played on the hockey teams and in the schools too. But like, some, I mean, U of A is like it's a popular school too, so they have a lot more options for the players. But you know, yeah, it's definitely the place to be if you're watching university hockey in Edmonton.
I saw McEwen play, I think, once while I was there, and like, it's good hockey, like, don't get me wrong, that level, but it just, I think, like, college hockey and university hockey in Canada has room to grow. Like, we just had the University of New Brunswick. Their men's team, 32-0, didn't lose a single game all year. That's a hell of a story. You don't hear about it much in Canadian media, though. Like, I only found out through Spit and Chicklets, which is American. I didn't hear it through TSN or Sportsnet or none of that. None of them really talked about it. That's an amazing feat. Like, why aren't we hyping up Canadian college and university sports, right? Like, it's such a lost opportunity.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, I definitely think university college hockey and sports in general, you know, it gets left by the wayside too. Yeah, there's a lot of ways we can judge that and think about it. But yeah, I think they just need to try and do better with getting that on the mainstream media. But
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, we'll see. If you guys are listening, you got a cool story to share as well, feel free to toss me a message on Instagram, TikTok, whatever. And if you want to talk on the podcast, feel free. Yeah, let me know and we'll make something happen. We're always down to chat with anybody. So happy to have you guys on. And yeah, other than that, thank you guys for listening. This is episode 3 of the Sheldon Productions podcast, and we'll catch you guys on the next one.